You were at Daytona.
Yes.
Talk about sort of the mood there when that crash happened with Kyle Busch.
You know, we were all kind of sitting in the media center. And I think everybody at first was just looking at it in horror, because for him to be able to pull himself out and just kind of lay there and still be responsive, that was amazing in and of itself. We've seen that happen so many times where drivers go straight into the wall, mm-hmm. and it is not as fortunate as what we witnessed with Kyle Busch. But you
know, Dale Earnhardt, for instance.
Exactly. So you know, when you look at things like this and you think of what NASCAR is, number one, it is that type of sport that you have to sit back and say, okay, you know, it's just you and the car.
Sure.
And it's you and 30-some other cars.
Going very fast.
And you always have to have it in the back of your mind that I need to do what I need to do to stay healthy and stay safe. But then you also have, you look at the tracks to have that same responsibility to you.
What's interesting is that there was like a $400 million renovation at Daytona. And I'm just kind of curious. One would think $400 million, they would probably, and again, we weren't there.
Right.
But one would think that maybe there would be safety barriers around the entire track. And you follow this more closely than I do. So was it just not there, or?
You know, that is a continuing conversation and debate along the NASCAR tracks and what type of safety implications they are going to impose in the tracks. The great thing was right after that happened, Daytona did take precautions and start putting up some type of barriers around the track for the actual NASCAR race, which was the next day. Kyle was racing that day in the new Xfinity series. So they were, you know, taking a step forward and somewhatly being precautious for the next day. Talladega the next day went ahead and started to install barriers. That race is, you know, one of the best, you know, great speedway. And, you know, so hopefully a lot of the tracks are going to start to take notice and say, hey, you know, this is something that is real. I don't know, you know, why they don't feel that, but this is something that is real. This is something that can happen to our drivers, and it is life and death.
And what about AMS?
Exactly, same thing.
Atlanta Motor Speedway.
You know, there were nothing that AMS came out with and said that this is what we're doing, this is where we stand with this. There was, you know, it hasn't been said that there are extra precautions. They have a number of rails that are already in place. So they may feel, I can't speak for them, but they may feel as though this is something that, you know, we've done what we are supposed to do.
Now, you cover NASCAR, you cover a lot of races, and for the fans, I would say, well, you know what, these guys, they know the risk, they take the risk. Perhaps it's too much, I guess, pressure on the industry to say we can prevent an injury, prevent a death. But look, let's go back to 2001, right after Dale Earnhardt was killed. I mean, NASCAR mandated the use of those head and I think neck restraints.
Exactly.
And even some of the drivers complained they didn't want to wear them.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, well, what do you want?
Right. Well, the thing about it is, you know, when you are, most of the drivers are between the ages of, you know, 17 and 25. Some of them don't even have driver's license to drive on, you know, the streets every day with us, but they're driving cars and they're going 200 miles an hour. And, you know, those are the things that, you
That's
know,
kind of scary that you just told me that.
Yeah, some of them don't. And then, you know, with a number of the programs that are inside of NASCAR, like the Drive for Diversity, where a number of younger people are coming up, women and men are coming up into the NASCAR and really understanding it, you know, they are looking at it like it's an adrenaline rush.
Well,
yeah. I mean, it is. And so, you know, those types of things could, as they in their mind, think about it and say, you know, this could hinder us from doing what we need to do. I had an opportunity over the weekend to actually sit in a NASCAR, and the number one, my hips were just on the sides. I said, I don't understand. And you know, the thing about it is you've got to be small in stature. You've got to be relatively skinny. So a lot of these guys are, you know, really small and frail men who and women. Danica
Patrick is little.
Very little.
Yeah, and to sit in that, because you're in a steel cage.
Yeah.
And I've heard that drivers say they can lose anywhere up to 10 pounds in one race.
Because it's hot, yeah. Because you have the heat from the track, you have the heat from the other cars, and then you have this suit on that is, you know, flame retarded. So, you know, that is the position of it. So it is one of those sports that every single day you look at it and say, you know, I could lose my life doing this.
While they're debating the safety measures, the folks who run NASCAR and the tracks are debating what to do to address a problem that they've been having where attendance is going up, but the TV ratings are going down. And even with the rising attendance, they've actually, in some of the tracks, have taken out seats. So what's happening with this sport? It's in a state of flux, a state of transition, trying to attract new TV viewers for sure,
right,
while keeping that fanatical base that it has. How
right.
are they doing with that sort of double job?
You know, I think it's, you know, it's trying to create that celebrity in it. We have that with football, we have that with basketball, but also trying to put the drivers out there a little bit more so the fans can really understand and see who they are. I tell people who don't care for NASCAR or haven't watched it or things like that, I always say, you have to go. You have to go to actually get the experience, to really understand it, to feel the adrenaline, because it's something about the vibration and the sound. But as you're watching it on television,
you don't get that.
You don't get that. But, you know, they're trying to do a little bit more of the celebrity, trying to involve a lot more of the drivers so you can actually see who these guys and women are.
Well, Jimmy Johnson has done he's done what Tiger Woods was doing mm-hmm. in golf. So
right.
how come he's not the celebrity that Tiger Woods was?
Well, and then you also have to look at it. These guys are, you know, for lack of better words, they're down-home country boys who all they want to do is drive. They don't really care about that. They don't care about the celebrity. Everybody outside of them is what is caring about the celebrity. All they want to do is get in their car and drive.
Well, that leads me to this, because the whole perception of NASCAR, let's just be really clear, the perception of NASCAR was that, oh, it was mostly for Southern white guys.
Right.
That has changed. And even in the viewership, the attendance among women has increased as well. So this leads me to the where NASCAR has worked really hard, Marcel, in trying to implement minority and diversity programs.
Exactly. That is what the whole Drive for Diversity is. They have an amazing diversity division that's ran by Don Harris. And, you know, the great thing about it is they are trying to involve more African Americans, trying to involve more Latinos, trying to involve more women into what the sport is and what the experience of that sport is. And you can definitely see that when you go to one of the tracks.
They have luxury suites.
Yes. And the whole—that's a whole nother conversation.
I mean, luxury
yeah.
suites at a racetrack.
It is night and day from if you've ever been in a suite at a football game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
you have chefs that are there preparing whatever you may
but
ask.
Who can have? I mean, and football and baseball are dealing with this too. At the bottom line, if you're going to, the long-term health of the sport depends on keeping a big fan base who
right.
are going to watch TV even if they don't go to the game. But if they don't feel like they're part of it, if they feel they're priced out of it,
right.
how do you do that? And yet NASCAR obviously needs to attract fans who will pay more.
Right.
Again, a double job they're facing.
Right. And then, you know, they've also imposed something called FanView, where fans at home can be a part of what's actually inside of the race car, be able to listen to what exactly is happening inside of the cars between the driver and their pit crew and their crew chief. So those are things that, you know, NASCAR is looking at trying to do to bring in that fan.
You know, we talked about the $400 million renovation for Daytona. It's like when you have a new football stadium or a basketball arena, you have to make it so that even people that may not care about the sport or the sporting event, they will come because there's so much else to do at that track. And, yeah. I think that's what probably they think will help. If you're not a NASCAR fan, you can still take grandma and grandpa and everybody else, the whole family, because there's so much to do.
You know, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, it is definitely one of the things that you can bring the entire family to. The great thing about NASCAR is that the price point isn't as high as if you were trying to take a family of four to, say, a football game or a basketball game. The fan experience, being able to actually walk on the track and be a part of it and see the drivers and be able to touch their cars and, you know, things like that before the race starts, I think that is a part of it that not only enhances the sport but also enhances your excitement for the sport.
Well, you're at the races. Have you seen an increase in terms of minority fans coming to the races?
I definitely have. When we were at Atlanta Motor Speedway last year, I definitely saw a lot more African Americans than I have seen in past years. I have a number of friends, both male and female, that are telling me, hey, I can't wait to go to the race. I talk it up every chance I get. And I'm always saying, you know, you should definitely go out and see it. You know, you can't just sit at home. Yeah, it becomes monotonous. It's kind of like watching golf on television.
Or people playing poker. I'm sorry. I just don't get watching
neither,
TV.
Yeah, you and me both.
Neither do I.
Playing cards.
Yeah.
It's just my opinion.
So that's the sense of the meeting. So real quickly, at Atlanta Motor Speedway, one of the things that they have worked very hard to do is get that second race back for the year. We lost the spring race for a while, and we had the one later on. Now we've got one back in the spring.
Right.
So what's the future now for Atlanta as a NASCAR fixture and one that maybe even could grow?
I think that the intent is there. I think that they want to have, want Atlanta to be more of that NASCAR fixture. I think that is why that race was moved from Labor Day. There's so much going on Labor Day weekend. You know, I had a conversation with one of the media guys with NASCAR, you know, why that race was moved, mm-hmm. you know, into the spring. Because it is Labor Day weekend in Atlanta, and we have college football. We have
baseball. Yeah.
We have so many things.
Every Friday afternoon before Labor Day, we're just looking at Dragon Con and all this stuff.
Yeah, so you have so many things that's diverting people's attention. So here is an opportunity for where there's nothing else happening except for basketball and then your updates on spring training for the Atlanta Braves. And bringing NASCAR back into the city and what, you know, fans want to see.
Less competition.
Exactly. And then I think if it does continue to grow and if there is a great showing at the race this weekend, you know, hopefully in years we will be able to get that second race back.
And Marcel, as we wrap up, how did you get into covering NASCAR?
I was working with Atlanta Falcons' Terrence Mathis a number of years ago when he was trying to launch his minority-owned team, and that is how I became obsessed with it. You know, had covered, you know, sports for a number of years in radio, and this was something new for me. It's great. I mean, the adrenaline, the cars. I came back from Daytona. My mother was like, you smell like gasoline. I said, I've been in the pits for 3 days, Mom.
I remember the very first time I covered the Brickyard 400 in
Indianapolis.
Met a young man by the name of Jeff Gordon. I was an intern at a CBS affiliate, Wish TV, in Indianapolis, and I remember saying, he's a very nice young man.
He is.
And now he's in his final season,
yes.
Full-time anyway.
Yes. About to retire, and I think I just told my age.